Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and it's time to take a look at your kitchen and maybe your bathroom, or in many houses, bathrooms. Today, that's what we're going to focus on as we talk renovation and repair with our two guests. Back with us, been with us for a long time, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Chad, welcome back.
It's Larry. It's always great to be here.
Great to have you with us. Also with me in the studio, Zach Parmeter, a new outside sales representative for Ferguson Home in Madison. Zach spent, the last 14 years working in sales for Golden Eagle Log and Timber Homes based in Wisconsin Rapids. And Zach Parmeter, welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Larry. It's really great to be a part of the show today.
Well, it's great to have you here. And as we talk with our two experts, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about remodeling a kitchen or a bathroom? Give us a call. The number, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Zach, maybe tell us about the business that you're a part of now, Ferguson Home.
Boy, Ferguson is an incredible organization, Larry. You'll find it in so many different areas of our economy, from data centers to large commercial buildings. What I am involved with from day to day is new home builds, whether it's remodeling or homes under construction, even large apartment complexes. Ferguson's providing lighting, plumbing, hardware, appliances, even water heaters. What makes Ferguson such a valuable part of those building systems is truly not only the nearly unlimited amount of options that we offer, because of course everyone wants a custom experience when they build a home, but even beyond that, and I can attest this from a construction perspective, the logistics behind Ferguson are incredible, from national distribution centers, being able to source materials all over the country. It allows for us to help relieve one of the biggest stress points in the build process, which would be timelines. You generally don't have to be waiting on Ferguson when it comes to material. We've got it ready for you.
Well, Chad Spade, let me turn to you for a minute. Kind of nice to be able to work with somebody like Zach from Ferguson, but when folks want to remodel a kitchen or a bathroom, what are they talking to you about? And maybe what should they really be talking about first?
Yeah, you bet. Well, so, you know, many times when people reach out to us, you know, the space has become dated. Things are wearing out. There might be faucets that drip or tile that's starting to fail, grout that's coming out, you know, or maybe it just looks really old. But the big opportunity that we're often helping our customers implement, no matter what led them to renovate in the way of aging or wearing out, is that there are opportunities to improve the functionality of the space. And there are ways to make the space more accessible, safer to live in day to day. You know, maybe it's improving the ventilation, improving the lighting, improving the functionality of the storage within the space. And then, of course, you've got, you know, improved shower fixtures, improved tub accessories, jetted tubs or soaking tubs. We've got bidet toilets that are very popular. There's so many things that are part of a modern bathroom. And then, of course, you know, kitchen's a whole nother topic, but in bathrooms, you know, there's just so much that you can do to improve the space.
Yeah. Zach, thinking about bathrooms or kitchens, maybe opportunities, as Chad said, to update faucet shower systems, add other modern features. What are the latest trends in your mind that you're seeing?
Boy, Chad hit on a few of the most popular already. Let's just start in bathrooms. Those bidet seats are becoming increasingly popular, yet it is one of those items that oftentimes comes along with a lot of uncertainty and question marks. We may find clients putting that in their primary bathroom suite, but they'll still omit that from the guest suite. They don't want guests coming over and you know, having any questions when they go into the bathroom. But what I can tell you with pretty good certainty here is that in fast forward 20 years, you're going to see a lot more bidet seats. A lot of people like them, not only from the cleanliness perspective, but it also offers additional lighting in the evening time because they do have night lights. They have heated seat functions. And then there are also customizable functions. And one thing to note is just because the bidet seat exists doesn't mean you need to use it. So if you do enter a space with a bidet seat, you could just treat it as you would any other toilet seat.
Okay. Well, I was thinking back as you were talking, probably 30 years ago, I spent a year at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, and the house I rented had a bidet, and I didn't know how to use it. It was quite a surprise.
You know, that is a story like that I think many people will relate to. And what is funny about the conversation regarding bidets is, well, first of all, a lot of people have had that experience. And they enter it with a lot of questions, and then they become one of the biggest advocates. You'll find homeowners that previously had a bidet seat in their home will go searching for their next home to verify one of two things. Does an outlet already exist behind the toilet? And if not, how can we get one there? Because they want to make sure to power that bidet seat. Another great feature with having it electrically powered is, of course, that would then be heated water to whatever your desired temperature is. Now, if we could parlay heated water into another space in the home, let's move into the kitchen where instant hot water is certainly very popular. We've seen that for many years. People oftentimes limit their idea of how they would use it. When they originally make that selection, they think, well, we'll use it for tea, or we'll help kickstart getting the boiling pot of water going, mm-hmm. so I don't have to wait nearly as long. But what we've also found is that a lot of people prefer to use it even just for ease of cleaning materials. If you've got a pan, you just made your morning eggs. The eggs have unfortunately stuck to the pan this time. Well, you've got that instant hot water, and you can let it soak there. It makes it so much easier to clean your dishware.
That's also something that existed in Trinidad when I was down there, and it was quite a nice feature, as a matter of fact. Chad, how can a bathroom, I'm trying to think about functionality. You talked about functionality. How do you make it more functional and stress relieving?
Great question, Larry. Well, there are a couple of things. Sometimes it's the layout. There are occasionally bathrooms that just don't work. And it makes sense to, say, move the toilet or reconfigure the location of a tub or a shower because, there are challenges with what you have. But having said that, in most bathrooms, the fixtures stay where they are or where they were. Mm-hmm. And what we are doing instead are making some improvements to the way the individual spaces are rebuilt. So for example, one of the biggest improvements that we can make for many of our clients is to either reduce the size of the curb that leads into a shower, or to entirely eliminate that curb so that you have just a flat floor, you walk right in on one level, nothing to trip on from your bathroom floor into your shower. And of course, when you do that, then you have to do some things to alter the pitch of the floor of that shower and to make sure that the drain is going to function well and that water is not going to be creeping out into the bathroom common floor space. Other things can be done to change the size of the toilet. Sometimes there are elongated toilets and spaces where a more compact toilet is called for. Sometimes a wall-mounted toilet is the best solution to gain even more space in front of the toilet. And that's a situation that is more common in commercial bathrooms where the toilet is hung on the wall and the tank is essentially hidden in the wall. But that is something that we've done in a number of residential bathrooms. Sometimes it might be a fixture that is activated by touch rather than, or just by motion rather than having to turn handles.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, grab bars are a thing that a lot of people think of when you think of safety or functionality. If you're stepping in and out of a tub, for example, it doesn't matter what age you are or what your abilities are. If you have something that you can safely grab onto, that is going to make for a daily routine where you're less likely to get injured using your tub.
Chad mentioned toilets there as we were talking, and there are now, Zach, smart toilets. Can you explain or maybe talk about the features of that now are out there for a smart toilet?
Well, what a great question, Larry. Oftentimes when we're looking to incorporate smart technologies in a home, it's because we want to make life a little bit easier or we want to eliminate repetitive tasks. So, I mean, maybe the best example for someone to think of is smart lighting, right? Where you want something to automatically happen. Well, with a smart toilet, we have auto cleansing features where it circulates that water, cleans it, and introduces water into that toilet bowl that would be easier to keep clean over a longer period of time. We already highlighted earlier the benefits of a heated toilet, mm-hmm. as well as, of course, a nightlight feature. So that's something important to keep in mind. Now, I'm going to take this conversation a little bit sideways here, but just bear with me, Larry. This is something that's coming in the pipeline.
Okay.
Kohler will be introducing some AI intelligence to actually assess how your bathroom activity is going within the toilet. And that is, I know I'm skirting around this a little bit, but this is really more a part of the health and wellness space. There is a huge push towards saunas, cold plunges. And even if you look at it from someone having biometric data on their smartwatches or smart rings, there is a group of people out there, very health and wellness focused, who would like that sort of feedback and reported activity. So that is actually, these smart toilets just keep getting smarter. And I think that we'd already talked about all the question marks regarding bidet seats. I would venture to guess that regarding this advanced reporting that'll happen with toilet seats in the future, that'll even have a much more bold question mark. I don't think I'll be able to convince anyone else to hop on that train too early. But we are in a unique space right now, Larry, where a lot of clients, they are looking for the latest and greatest, and they can see where a simple upgrade can improve their lifestyle and the way they enjoy their space. When you talk about frustrations in the kitchen or in the bathroom, oftentimes it is related to function, which Chad had highlighted on earlier. So whether it's storage spaces and of course the usability of the space. I've done a lot of cabinetry design in my past, and I can tell you people love roll trays. Why? It's because you can easily see everything that's in there. And when you have many small items, they don't get lost among each other. We can easily locate them and put them back where they belong. So while I may highlight that smart features are oftentimes looked at as a great way to improve the user experience, sometimes it does simply come down to fundamentals and really good design. And that will never change, no matter how much technology we incorporate into our homes.
Zach Parmeter, who is the outside sales representative for Ferguson Home in Madison, and Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison, our guests today as we talk with them, zeroing in today on bathrooms and kitchens. And you can join in with your questions as we move along. And I hope you do. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News as we take a look at remodeling and home renovation with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build of Monona and Madison, Zach Parmeter, who is sales representative for Ferguson Home in Madison. Great to have both of them with us. And questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Karen in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I knew you'd answer the phone before I could put together all my thoughts. But the main thing is, how can all of these things that you're replacing be reused? You know, I think nowadays we need to think more about sustainability and not heated toilet seats. And what about living simply so people can simply live? We don't even have housing for people. And I know you're going to say this is not on the subject, but it is. You know, our choices make a difference. And also I hate wasting things. I mean, I recycle one piece of lumber and find a place to use it.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for calling. And we'll probably get both of our guests to maybe talk with you about that. Chad, we'll turn to you first. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, that's Karen, those are great questions. And I certainly share your basic belief, you know, that we do, you know, fundamentally, it is about what our clients' needs are. So, but to the particular issue of what things might be more helpful or how to reuse things, typically what we are taking out of a bathroom is often broken in some manner. You know, it is not unusual for us to be remodeling spaces that are over 50 years old. Various washers and other parts of a faucet which can be replaced to keep an old faucet in good working order. At some point, things do wear out and they need to be replaced. And then there is that issue of safety, which certainly ties into livability and sustainability, because if you're getting injured in your home, you're going to have other problems and challenges and cost, which will diminish your quality of life and increase the cost of living, because your home is not sustaining your health and your mobility. But I do think that you are reminding us of some of the important points that we have to, you know, figure out ways to provide more affordable housing and make sure that everyone has a roof over their head. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Zach, thanks, Chad. Zach, comment.
Oh, boy. Yeah. What a great question, Karen. And Chad, I think that the emphasis on your response, I would like to restate. Beyond that, just the quality of materials certainly matters. Remember the old adage, they don't make refrigerators like they used to. And what a shame that you would ever think that you would need to get rid of a refrigerator after only having it for 5 years. Well, that goes with any product in your home. That's why when you're choosing these materials, it's Ferguson wants to partner with quality vendors that are, and we're not selling material, putting material in your homes that you'd have to replace in short order. We look at that with all materials when it comes to home construction. You don't want to put up siding only for it to fade in a few years or to have any other defect. just imagine the tremendous amount of waste that would come with that. So sometimes it is worth it to spend that extra dollar and to be conscientious of that. Will that be something that affects the whole economy and shortages with housing? Certainly that itself will not resolve many of the problems that exist, but it to support an economy that does say quality over quantity, to say, hey, when we do build our home or we do renovate, we want to make sure we make quality selections, something that will last a lifetime. And I think that that will, in some way or another, support a more holistic effort to say, these homes are meant to support our lives, to bring together community and a family, and to be healthy spaces for everyone to enjoy, rather than to be simply a status symbol or something that is a matter of, how can I make my house look fancy for the lowest price? That's not what it's about. It's about quality and enjoying the space.
Kathy, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a technical sort of question from Jeff. He emailed to say that they have a mid-1980s bathroom with 4 inches by 4 inches ceramic wall tile that was applied over painted drywall. In renovating the bathroom, is it best to scrape the tile off the wall, clean up the wall, and retile, or should Jeff just cut out the drywall with tile still adhered to the wall and apply new wallboard? Chad, go ahead.
So one of the critical components of a well-built bathroom is that the wall surface that's behind the tile, whatever it is waterproofed in some manner, and that waterproofing is integrated with whatever flanges might be on the tub or the shower base in the space. And so, you know, what this is about is having a substrate behind the tile that is going to last a long time, that's not going to immediately start to crumble or deteriorate if or when the water gets behind the tile at some point, when the grout may fail or when a caulk joint might fail. So, you know, and this again speaks to doing it right. So the odds are good that it's going to make sense to tear that wall out and do it right if there has been deterioration of that wall. But if in fact everything is solid and you just have some tiles that have come off and you've decided it's time to replace it and everything is still, you know, the tile can be removed and that is still a sound substrate, there might be a possibility that that could be waterproofed and then a new tile applied to it. But often, like, it is so hard to get all of that material off to prepare it that it just becomes more cost effective to know that you have a good substrate by tearing out what is there and putting in something new, because it's not typically a lot of space that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Around a tub or a shower, you know. So it's worth it often to do it right, because we often find that there were some critical details skipped when the bathroom was either renovated or initially constructed.
Makes a lot of sense to me. Kathy in Madison has a question. Oh, let's go there. Kathy, hello.
Hi. Yeah, my question is, I've been thinking about putting in a stacking washer and dryer in one of my bathrooms. I've got a two-story house and a finished basement. So right now the washer and dryer is in the basement. And I was thinking either the main bathroom on the second floor, which has a bathtub, so I'd probably have to take that out. Or there's a powder room on the first floor that's just a toilet and a sink. And I'm just wondering, like, in terms of resale value, is it dangerous to take out the only bathtub and or, you know, the convenience of second floor versus first floor?
Okay. Zach, do you want to take a shot at this to begin with? And Chad can join in, too.
Well, Kathy, first of all, I would design this space based on how you and your family want to enjoy it. And I can tell you that I would align more with your preferences of incorporating that second washer dryer unit. That would be incredibly convenient. Depending on the age of the home, I'd imagine that the floor system can support that additional weight, because not only do we need to think about the static weight of the units themselves, but they will also have a lot of water in them at one point in its wash cycle. Ventilation is going to matter. While there are ventless dryers out there, you should be cautioned that it will extend the dry time on the dryer. And of course, we need to make sure we have an adequate power source.
Chad, to add to that?
I would simply say that it is possible on a number of occasions when we have added a laundry in an existing home on a new floor, they can potentially go into a closet of a bedroom that is on the second floor. That is often where we are looking for an opportunity. Often a typical closet is not deep enough to accommodate a washer dryer, but it is possible to renovate the closet so that it has more depth. That is certainly one option. There are a number of places that you might look to make, to accommodate this need. Obviously, you're going to have to connect both to the water systems and the drain. And as Zach said, good ventilation of that dryer is important. So these are all things that play into where a professional would recommend you consider placing these appliances. But it's definitely something that can be done. And to address the specific question about a tub, I'll say that we have had a fair number of clients. It's not the majority of clients for sure, but we've had a fair number of people that have decided that their lifestyle is such that they are going to remove the tub that's in their home and end up with a home without a tub. Now, any realtor will tell you that that's probably not a great decision. But there are also a lot of us, over 95% of us, rarely, if ever, take a bath in a tub. And so, it's just a limitation that you're going to be imposing, but you certainly could do that.
It probably eliminates, as potential buyers, young people with children, small children. Mm-hmm.
Definitely a consideration. I mean, though, having said that, I know, a lot of us are accustomed to having a small tub that we use maybe in the floor of a shower. Particularly if you have a large shower, there are ways to create a tub for a small child and, kind of overcome that. That's definitely something to consider.
Yeah. Kathy, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Wendy and Madison, your turn. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I have a house that was built in 1961, and obviously things are coming up that need to be remodeled. I have a very tiny primary bathroom, and so I have two questions. First of all, since I am planning to do that, that's as soon as I get my fence replaced, the bathroom is the next project. Several feeble unsatisfactory attempts have been made at it making it a nice place, and it's not. And the tiles are falling apart. So my first question is, I want to know about how much I should budget for having a complete remodel of my little tiny bathroom. I want to say it's 10 by 5, but it might be longer than that. And then also, my concern always with small spaces is that I really want somebody who's going to make me feel like I and my project are as important to them as someone who has 10 times more space or money.
All right. Well, probably Zach and Chad both. Zach, you want to start?
Well, you know, it's difficult to estimate based on a 10 by 5 space because we need to get an understanding for the features that are in there. I would imagine my instinct is you're looking at least 10 grand to get into the space, to get it completely refreshed and to a very enjoyable level. With that being said, oftentimes the countertop itself, just I would imagine you're looking at least a grand for the countertop, a couple $1,000s, maybe $1,500 for that vanity cabinet. But it's really going to be the time that it goes into the space. I think that's going to absorb at least half the cost because doing a remodel, tearing out the original material is going to be probably just as time consuming as refreshing the space and making it look as great as you desire it to be. I'd be curious what Chad's take is on this.
Yeah, Chad?
Yeah, well, bathrooms are expensive. And, you know, from a square footage perspective, they're the most expensive room to renovate in a home per square foot. And, you know, they're often thousands of dollars a square foot when you look at it that way. It is uncommon in an older home. And I mean, a home built in 1961, I mean, the good news there, Wendy, is that typically homes built in the early 60s have really good bones. It's kind of the high watermark of construction in the United States. From the mid 50s to the mid 60s, homes are just solid, typically. I mean, there are exceptions, but you know, it's uncommon, and I know this may seem shocking, but based on what Zach just said, but it's uncommon for us to totally renovate a bathroom for less than $50,000, and that, you know, has to do with just getting all that debris, all the material out of the bathroom through your home and out the door. Into a dumpster without wrecking your house. So a lot of effort goes into protecting the space that allows us to come and go to the bathroom. And of course, all the time and materials and labor that goes into removing what is there that is defective or worn out and in need of replacement. And then, you know, it's putting it all back together, often bringing things up to code, sometimes doing some structural reinforcement. There's just a lot that goes into a quality end product with a quality service being provided while it's happening. So it is expensive to completely gut a bathroom. Now, having said that, you know, we may find, given the age of your home, that more of a refresh is what you can do, where things are simply pulled out and replaced, and we don't have to gut a lot of the walls or ceiling. But that's something that we figure out during the planning phase. And you certainly, I mean, to speak to the second question that Wendy asked about, you know, being treated with respect and full attention. I mean, certainly I think every consumer deserves that. It's certainly what we strive to do as a company, but, you know, I say there are a lot of contractors out there that are equally committed to a quality experience and a quality service, and that are going to, you know, give you the attention you deserve. So, you know, I always recommend the National Association of the Remodeling Industry is a good resource for qualified contractors, and obviously, you know, read those reviews and talk to references and do your due diligence. And good luck with your project.
Yeah, good luck with the project, Wendy. Thank you. Actually, Terry in Rome, Wisconsin has a question that relates to what we were just talking about. So let's go there. Terry, hi, thank you.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Actually, one of your guests just touched on it. I redid the bathroom in a house that my wife were living in Milwaukee recently. And when I decided to remodel the bathroom, it occurred to me that statistically, most people aren't living in a house more than 7 to 10 years. A lot of people buy a house and an upgrade or move. So when we redid our bathroom, after gutting the bathroom out, I tiled the floor, tiled the walls, 4 to 5 feet up, and I opted to use a vanity sink that would be easy to attach and remove, as well as a clawfoot bathtub that somebody could easily disconnect and remove, and then still have all the tile intact, the floor, the walls, and conveniently and inexpensively upgrade or remodel the bathroom to their choice, assuming that they were satisfied with the tile that I put in. So, and that's what we did. So, my daughter's living in the house now, and should she decide to remodel the bathtub, she can do that at relatively low cost by just replacing the vanity of her choice and a new bathtub if she wants.
Hmm. Well done, Terry. Zach, I think you might agree with that.
Oh, I certainly do. And oftentimes those bathtubs do make quite a statement piece. There are a few questions that people oftentimes have regarding the materials for these tubs. And it's certainly going to depend on how you want to use it. Acrylic tubs can oftentimes give you the beautiful aesthetic that many people aspire for, yet at a fraction of the price and of the weight. Whenever we're thinking remodeling, we need to think of how are we going to get these large tubs into the space. So it sounds like a great approach and offers a lot of great flexibility for the future.
Yeah, it sure does. Terry, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Nick in Green Bay, we'll turn to you. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I got a couple comments before my question. The estimate you gave that poor lady with the full remodel of her bathroom, it kind of killed me because that's the size of my bathroom. But I told my wife before I asked this question, I told her to ask the landlord, and she didn't think this was very funny because we are the landlord. So we bought this house. It's the 1950s, and I thought it would be awesome owning a house, but it's not so awesome anymore. They've got the heat vent right in front of the sink in the bathroom here. And I know that it's going to be a hard question to answer because you can't see it, but how hard do you think it would be to remove that heating vent and locate it someplace else? Because every time somebody comes in the bathroom, they step in that heating vent and they bend it downwards. So
it's really
in a very inconvenient location. And I've replaced the heating cover like many times and everybody steps on it and bends it inwards.
Oh, my gosh. Nick, thanks for calling. Chad, what do you think?
So, that's a great question, Nick. And it's hard to know what the options are. Typically what we're going to do, what I would encourage you to do to start to uncover what might be possible is to take that vent cover off and look down into the floor to see which direction the duct goes. Which will let you know where it's coming from, which wall maybe it's coming from, which then would potentially shine light on where you might be able to relocate that duct to either bring it up a wall so that it's then coming out of a wall vent and not on the floor. A duct is, duct work and plumbing are the two things that take up the most area getting from point A to point B. And they're often the things that cause a lot of complications. Sometimes, unfortunately, when they haven't been thoughtfully installed, the structural elements of a home have been compromised by holes that might have been drilled or cut in the framing. And so we have to be careful not to, damage the structure of the home when we're moving a duct. And you are going to have to work around the plumbing that might be in the floor cavity or in the walls. So that will limit what your options are. It's the sort of thing that certainly is more likely to be addressed as part of a full renovation of the space. But as you alluded to at the beginning of your question, you know, it that unto itself is a very expensive proposition. So it is, though, possible probably to move that to a slightly better location. And maybe it's even bringing it up into the toe kick of the if there is a cabinet there with the sink. And if not, maybe it could just be moved back a little further if it's a pedestal sink to get it out of the path of someone in the bathroom. Yeah. So good luck with that.
Good luck with that, Nick. Thank you very much for calling. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Zach Parmenter of Ferguson Home in Madison, our guest today. And you can join in 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here as we talk home renovation. We've zeroed in a bit on kitchens and bathrooms with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, Zach Parmenter of Ferguson Home in Madison, our guests today. And an email from Ian in Madison emailed to say that he has an 85-year-old house with galvanized steel plumbing. Is it time to replace those? Ian has noticed particles coming out of the faucets, but no leaky pipes yet. A plumber advised replacement. Your advice. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, so the old galvanized pipe will become essentially clogged just like an artery in the human body. And in Madison, we have very hard water. And so what happens is that those minerals will build up on the wall, on the perimeter of the pipe, and over time, significantly diminish the amount of water that can flow through the pipe. And then, of course, that material that's building up on the sides of the pipes can occasionally, break off and be kind of in the water. So it is a challenging situation with that particular type of pipe. And it is not uncommon for people to decide that there are some better types of materials that can be installed to replace it. So
there you go. Thanks very much, Ian, for that question. Appreciate it. John in Appleton has a question. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. My kitchen, which is, a house is built in 2014, and when they put the heating system in, they cut in the holes in the flooring, and then they put the kitchen cabinets over the top of them. But what they didn't do is bring a piece of, ductwork from the opening in the floorboard, is kind of centrally located underneath the cabinet out to the kickboard. So the hot air, cold air just spills into that opening underneath the cabinet, and then eventually it comes out of a kickboard area. And it just drives me crazy because I think it's so inefficient. I'm losing anything, but it just drives me crazy. I'd like to put in some ducting between the kickboard and the opening, like with a curved back wall. So it, kind of directs the air toward the front. Is there any way of doing that without cutting a hole through the bottom of the cabinet or... How would a person approach that?
Sure. So the great question, John, and I would say that it can be a very difficult thing to retrofit without being able to remove the cabinet to be able to put in the appropriate ductwork. Because if we were renovating your home, we would have that ductwork installed coming out of the floor and pointing towards the toe kick. And then we would place the cabinet down over top of it. Because typically the toe kick space under a cabinet is just a hollow area. And it sounds like right now, you know, the duct just spills into that area. And then there is some sort of opening that it's coming out of. You might be able to install a slightly undersized piece of duct through the hole where the vent is supposed to be there at the end of that duct. But I just, I'm having trouble imagining how you would make that work and actually get it to fit through the hole. And then be able to properly tape it together at the joints, because again, that's how you're going to prevent the inefficiency of the conditioned air spilling out of the ducting, and you want it to get to that final destination, which is where the grill gets installed right on the toe kick. So, you know, simple answer is that if you can somehow remove that cabinet to properly install the ductwork, that is going to ultimately be the better duct solution. But you might be able to figure out some way to slip it in. And, you know, maybe the other thing that I might recommend without seeing it, knowing all the details, is that you could, if it's possible to install a new toe kick as you're done with this, you could potentially cut a larger hole down there in the toe kick area to put in this ductwork and then install that new piece of toe kick, which would really just be a thin veneer. It's often about a quarter inch material. That toe kick cover would have the proper sized opening cut in it to then slide over your new ductwork and install the grill.
Ah.
So hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
Okay.
John, thank you very much for calling. Jim wants to know about touchless faucets, motion controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Are they any better? How do they work, and are they any better than the ones in public restrooms?
Well, that's a great question, John. Was it John?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, John, those touchless faucets have improved quite a bit throughout the years. The ones that are oftentimes seen in public restrooms have that red eye that can see that motion with a few inches from the faucet. There is, of course, features and technology from other manufacturers where you actually have to physically touch the faucet, and it can sense the skin contact with the faucet itself. Mm-hmm. Those are oftentimes much more predictable for visitors to your home or end users like yourself. One thing I would caution you on is that for many of these touchless faucets, you do need to have the lever on the faucet engaged and open at all times for the touchless feature to work, regardless of the technology that's in place. That will then allow that water flow to turn on and off, and to engage the water through the faucet. Other people do have concerns. How do we get power to the faucet? So you'll want to be sure to research whether a battery is supplying power or whether it's directly supplied. Oftentimes, there are both options available, and so you get ultimate flexibility even if you were to lose power.
There you go. Thanks very much for that question. Chad Spade and Zach Parmeter are going to be with us right up until 12:30 today to take your calls. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR News. And then we will be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in on WPR News. Larry Mueller here taking a look at home renovation and repair, zeroing in a bit on kitchen and the bathroom as we talk with our two guests for today. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison, Zach Parmeter, has the outside sales representative for Ferguson Home in Madison. Great to have both of them with us. We have callers online and a bunch of emails. Let's go to Richard in Galesville. Richard, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a one-story ranch-style house built in 1988. It has an exposed basement walkout on the west side, and I want to put two windows on the south side of that basement wall. I have about an 18-foot section of concrete that I want to put the two windows in. I kind of did it backwards because I have the windows already. They're 4 feet by 5 foot windows. My question is, and I'm a do-it-yourselfer, I'm not going to obviously cut the hole in the concrete myself, but my question is, where can I get some structural advice about what how to do that? It's hard to get a residential structural engineer to come to your house, so I don't want my house to fall down while I'm doing the construction.
Richard in Galesville. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, so Richard, I imagine you're open to hiring an engineer to potentially come to your home. And I'm not too familiar with what is close to Galesville. I don't know exactly where that is in the state, but there are people that we routinely reach out to when we need an engineer to get involved. Sometimes you may find that an engineer is willing to work with you if you take a number of photographs and possibly a video conference with the individual. I mean, there is modern technology that might allow you to provide all the necessary information for an engineer to be able to propose some solutions and help to create a workable plan. Likely what's going to be involved, as you probably know, is a header is going to need to be installed above this new concrete opening to carry the load of probably the floor and if not that, at a minimum, the wall that is above will definitely be a load. So you might make some calls to some engineers to see if they're open to that sort of an arrangement, if getting out to your home is the barrier.
Yeah, I'm thinking about where Galesville is located. It's sort of somewhat near La Crosse.
Okay.
And
I'm sure there's some engineering firms in La Crosse that that would be potentially willing to help you out with that. You're probably going to be spending a minimum $400 or $500 getting them to, look at, that might be without a site visit, but to look at all of the information that you'd be able to compile and send to them, and then to be able to give you an analysis and some solutions. Yeah. So good luck with that.
Yeah. Be money well spent, though.
Absolutely.
For sure. Richard, good luck. Thank you. Sherry in Boyceville, your turn. Hi, Sherry.
Thanks for taking my call. The problem we have is we have a wood stove furnace, and it has a cement block chimney that we put in, and it's within the walls along with our fireplace chimney, and it's starting to wear inside, but it's not on an outer wall. So what can we do to take care of that it's wearing out? Is there liners, or is there somebody that does something like that to fix them?
Chad, I'll go back to you for that. I think there are people out there that can work on that.
Yeah, you're going to need to consult with with someone a mason that specializes in this sort of a repair or upgrade. I'll confess that I'd be very dependent on some of the experts that we're accustomed to bringing in for a situation like this. And the particular situation you're describing, I don't recall ever necessarily encountering, but I do suspect that there would be some ways for something to be installed that would allow you to fix the problem. But it might be a little more invasive than what you were hoping. Because a wood-burning furnace and the particulate coming through that, I'm not sure how easily that will be able to be lined, but maybe it's possible.
That might be. Sherry, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Zach, there are some water purification systems that you can install. What are the advantages of something like that?
Boy, a lot of people are looking into incorporating reverse osmosis into their kitchen environment. So oftentimes it's just a single point of source with reverse osmosis, where it does a much more advanced filtration, getting that water as pure as possible. In fact, so pure that it removes all the minerals in the water. And of course, some people do prefer the additional taste of minerals. So you can take it one step further and add a remineralizer. I can speak from personal experience. We had an RO in our last house, and we'll be incorporating one in the next house as well. And it was always our go-to source. So whether it is for cooking or just for personal taste, you can not only rest assured that it's the healthiest water you can drink, but also it's going to taste the best. Now, there are many out there who do like more simple systems, and perhaps don't need such advanced treatment. So with that in mind, it is very cost effective to do whole home filtration. And that's something where you certainly just want to reach out to your plumber, and they're going to do water testing and send that out to make sure we get the right system for your home.
You know, as you were talking about water, it reminded me of a couple of other things. I've recall many a time carrying a big pot over to with water in it over to the stove for noodles or whatever, and a pot filler, which typically they're set up over the stove. Yes. Are they not?
Exactly. Yeah, we started seeing that on many high-end luxury homes probably about 10 years ago, and it's found its way into mainstream home design. You're seeing a lot of people that see it as an opportunity to elevate the space. There are homeowners that look at it purely from the function standpoint as well. In the scenario that you just suggested, Larry, if you're filling up that large pot of water, you're baking, you're cooking your pasta, boy, it's sure going to be a lot easier. But do keep in mind that eventually you will need to relocate that boiling pot of water over to your kitchen sink. So it doesn't solve all problems. It certainly can elevate the aesthetic of your kitchen, though.
And one other thing that came to mind for me was I've heard that a lot of people, or some people, are installing second dishwashers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here's what's great about that, Larry. As one dishwasher is clean, you find yourself easily pulling from the clean dishwasher as you load up the dirty dishwasher. They just keep it in rotation. I've been a part of many new home builds, and when you design the kitchen space, it is so important to take into consideration what you want to do with your appliances, because it's a great way to solve a problem. If you do a lot of hosting and you can have two dishwashers, it's just going to open up your countertops and prevent so much clutter.
Well, I can think of about three times a year when I have pretty fairly large groups of people at my home, and I have I never thought about a second dishwasher until I read about it. I thought, wow.
Well, if I may, Larry, you know, something to consider that maybe a homeowner wouldn't realize is an option is dishwasher drawers, where you've got a top drawer and a bottom drawer. That way you're only running half a load. What is great about that is you could have a load of dishes getting cleaned, and at the same time, while new dishes accumulate, you just simply put them into the other drawer and then run that as that one's full. It allows you to create a lot more cycles of smaller dishwasher loads and therefore create a more efficient use of your space.
That makes sense as well. That makes sense as well. Here's one. We have Bob in Sturgeon Bay couldn't stay with us. For the caller with the ductwork in the kitchen, Bob suggested cutting out the subfloor to get to the connection. Does that make sense, Chad?
Well, it could. And I think the challenge is going to be the access, because certainly you, unless you're planning to replace the floor in the entire kitchen, or perhaps it's easy to patch the floor. But barring that scenario, you're not going to want to, you're not going to want to damage or dismantle the floor out beyond the cabinet. And so the issue would be access, because typically that toe kick is only going to provide about 4 inches of space from the floor up to the cabinet down at the floor level. And so it's just going to be hard to work on the space that's under that cabinet when you've only got about 4 inches of clearance.
Brad,
yeah, the subfloor will get caught.
Yeah. Brad in Madison emailed to ask, is there a ratio or rule of thumb for a threshold dollar amount to completely renovate an old home versus tearing it down and building a new one?
Well, I mean, so this is the remodeling dilemma, but... the argument for remodeling and why, many people will do it is that you are preserving a resource by and large, and yet you are then addressing the things which have started to fail or wear out or need to be repaired or structurally improved, and then addressing those problems and making those improvements while keeping the bulk of the house. When you look at a whole house renovation, you're often going to spend as much, if not more, than what it might cost to tear down that house completely and build it new. And the reason for that is that so much care has to be taken in this, selective removal of materials while you're still preserving something. And then you're putting it all back together and having to integrate new systems to the old systems that are part of that older home. So I don't have a formula. The devil is always in the details, but by and large, remodeling a room is more expensive than the simple finishing of the space if the house were being built new at that moment. And that's because of all that time that's going to go into tearing out what's there and then the extra cost associated with integration with old systems. So hopefully that is helpful.
I was thinking about my own home that I purchased in 2010 and then took it a three-story with a basement as well and took that down to the studs. And it, I'm sure, was more expensive than, I'm pretty sure it's more expensive than if I had knocked it down. But the home fits in the neighborhood. It was had good bones. The floors, most of the floors were pretty good and just, wood floors that needed to be, sort of spiffed up. So in the end, I'm happy enough with what we wound up with. It's, mm-hmm. But it is a writing the checks. I can tell you, that ran through my head many a time as things come up. But when you're doing a home renovation like that, where you go right to the studs, it's a whole lot easier for the remodelers when they. I mean, there's walls came out. Different things happened that were. That made it a lot easier when, then we turned around and start putting in the new while retaining the look of the old. Yeah. Sure. Let's see. Let's go to Linda in Viroqua next. Linda, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
So I live in Viroqua in an older home where it appears that they did some plumbing in the city where it's not copper, it's not proper plumbing from the house to the street, and now I have to replace it. It's some kind of a cardboard or combination of different things that were supposed to be like, I don't know, it's not long-lasting. So now they're telling me that I need to have plumbing put in from my house to the street, and that's my responsibility, and they're asking for like $30,000.
Yep. Chad, Linda's in Viroqua.
Yeah. I'm not sure what to say. I'm familiar with what goes on when lead pipes are being replaced, and there's an obvious reason for doing that because of the hazard of lead in our drinking water. I'm not familiar with this product the problem that you're describing, but it has piqued my curiosity, and I'm sorry that you have that predicament. I would imagine it's the municipal water utility that is involved in addressing this. And often it is the case that the main line that is out in the street or that is, that homes are tapped off of, that the homeowner is generally responsible for that water line from the main line back to their home. So that's not an unusual circumstance, but it certainly is unfortunate that you're dealing with this. And that is a lot of money for a water line to be replaced.
Yeah, it is indeed. Linda, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Zach, I want to go back to you for a minute because you mentioned kitchen sinks earlier and workstation sinks, for mm-hmm. example. This, I've often thought about this myself with the sinks that I have and wishing I had something a little more workable.
Well, that is one of the first questions that people consider is, should I have one or two sink basins? And oftentimes, many people would believe that two sink basins just partitions it a bit too tight in there. I can't fit my large pans. Well, that is because we're limited by the traditional 36-inch sink base cabinet. Now, if we were to make that sink base cabinet even larger, let's just say go to 48 inches. That allows for this new evolution in sinks called a sink workstation. These sinks are allowing so much more flexibility for food prep, as well as for large oversized pans. So just imagine you can have multiple sink basins, and they could have different purposes. One would be an area where you would cut up all your vegetables and have the garbage disposal. The other would be for simply where you would fill up your beverages. I even have perhaps specialized water like carbonated water faucets or the InstaHot water. It's really catered to a much more flexible situation in the kitchen where you are meant to be to elevate it to more of a professional experience and consolidating all of your cooking activities.
Yeah. Chad, do you often install those?
We do occasionally install the large kind of multifunction sink that is not separated. I don't think we've often had one larger than the 36 inches, but I would just say to add to what Zach said, there's so much utility to be gained from some of these sinks that have all the various features, like there's a place to integrate a cutting board and a drying rack and a colander, and things like that are just part of the entire sink kit. And I live in a condo, which is, you know, a smaller space, where space is important and efficiency is important. And having that sort of a sink in our condo and in some of our clients' homes has made all the difference in, you know, greater utility and functionality with less. So they're great.
And a 36-inch sink base is really hitting that sweet spot, because we do need to think to ourselves, whenever you put a sink somewhere, we're eliminating opportunity for additional cabinetry. And that is always, we're thinking function in a kitchen, and being able to have extra storage or next to the kitchen sink, a wastebasket pullout, as well as your dishwasher, is of course most important.
Yeah. Dave emailed to ask, what does it cost to add an elevator to a house from the basement to the second floor?
Boy, that's one of those things where if you're not doing it with the original design, it's going to be pretty tricky, because you need to make sure you have a foundation below the elevator shaft. And even beyond that, you're going much further beyond the original foundation itself. That's going to be something where you need to consult with someone on that. Chad, do you have much experience with adding elevators into existing homes?
Not really. I mean, we put in a few dumbwaiters, it's just allow people to move some larger packages or groceries from one floor to another. But with a power lift, and those cost, you know, thousands of dollars. But I know that putting in a residential elevator, it can be a six-figure proposition. Mm-hmm. It's probably not going to be less than 60, 70 grand. But, I mean, I think often it's going to push into six figures for reasons that you just noted.
A fun fact about elevators is I've been a part of many new home builds, and about three in recent years have had elevators. When you get over a certain size of elevator, you are actually mandated by the state to have inspections on that elevator. So you may want to be cautious that you don't accidentally exceed that threshold.
On that happy note, we are out of time. Chad and Zach, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build, and a quick comment by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Chad's Design Build is one of WPR's many business sponsors. Chad, thanks again. Zach Parmeter is the outside sales representative for Ferguson Home in Madison. Zach, thank you for joining. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Coming up, we are going to turn our attention to the winner of the contest sponsored by the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce here in the state, on the 2025 Coolest Things Made in Wisconsin. That next. I'm Larry Mueller. Every year, state residents vote to determine the coolest thing made in Wisconsin. I'm thinking about some of the past winners. It was the Harley-Davidson motorcycle engines, the Big Boy all-weather rifle, and Jolly Good Soda were some of the winners. The 2025 winner of the coolest thing made in Wisconsin is a search and rescue airboat that can be driven on water and ice. It's made by Thousand Island Airboats, a company based in Marion, Wisconsin. And I'm going to talk with Fawn Rogers, president of Thousand Island Airboats. Fawn, welcome, by the way.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Appreciate it very much. And Kurt Bauer. Kurt is president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. And they co-sponsor the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest. I want to hear from you. What do you think is the coolest thing made in Wisconsin? Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Curtis, great to have you with us as well. And I think the name of the contest, well, pretty self-explanatory, but tell us how this came to be and the reason why we have an annual Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin contest.
Well, thanks for having me on, Larry. We started it 10 years ago, and we started it because we were trying to promote manufacturing careers in particular. And in Wisconsin, we do Manufacturing Month in October. And frankly, it wasn't getting the kind of attention that we thought it should. So we had a meeting internally here at WMC, and we came up with the Coolest Thing Made in Wisconsin, another type of a contest. The idea was to promote on social media things that are made in our state. We wanted people to know what's made in those industrial parks that have walls and nobody knows what's going on inside of them. We want people to feel civic pride on what's made in their hometown, what's made in their state, what's made in America. We're a manufacturing state. It's 20% of state GDP. 480,000 Wisconsinites work in manufacturing. It contributes $74 billion to our state's economy annually. Again, the largest economic sector, and most people don't know that, and they don't know the things that are made in the state. So the whole point was to promote manufacturing, and in particular, manufacturing careers.
It's pretty cool, and you thought it up, if I'm not mistaken, and now it's spread to many other states.
Yeah, it's taken on a life of its own in two regards. The first one you mentioned. Since we came up with it 10 years ago, 25 other states, whether they're state chambers or state manufacturers association, were a combined entity, were both of those things in one, now do similar. You know, all of the states around us, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Michigan, all do the Coolest Thing Made in their respective states. It all started with us. The other aspect of this that's been interesting is that we do Manufacturers of the Year Awards, which is our peer, prestigious award that we give to the best processes and the most profitable manufacturers. And we find that people really covet this award more than anything because it's just fun. There's a lot of publicity around it. Fawn was able to receive a beautiful trophy that's made by a manufacturer here in Wisconsin with the help of the local tech ed department at the local high school. So, it's taken on a life of its own. It's a lot of fun. We didn't think that it would last for 10 years, but here we are now. We'll start our 11th year next year, and it just continues to gain momentum. In the 10 years, Larry, we've had over 2 million people vote in this contest.
That is absolutely amazing. It's kind of, in a way, it's set up like the basketball tournament, kind of. But you start.
We call it manufacturing madness. Yes, we do. But we have to be careful because the NCAA will come on down on us. We can't say, I'm not allowed to say Final Four, even though I just did.
Well, so winners are determined by. So there's, you can apply as Fawn, and we'll hear from Fawn here. But I want to get this kind of out of the way first. People of companies can apply for the contest, and they're. I think you had over, 140 or so companies
Correct.
Actually applying. And then how does it go from there?
So we have a nomination process, and companies can nominate or, people can say, hey, this is my favorite thing made in Wisconsin. For example, that's how we got Jolly Good. You mentioned that earlier, that they were one of the winners. I think they won last year, as a matter of fact. From there, we have just a general vote, and we narrow it down to 16, and then we do manufacturing madness. So we do a bracket system based on the number of votes that they get, and we whittled that down to four. There were four that we had left as we go to our biggest event of the year, which is Business Day in Madison this year, held on October 24th. And you can vote up until noon. So, we had 900 people in the hall at Monona Terrace. They were still voting on their phones right up into the last minute. So we don't know who's going to win. This was, by the way, and Fawn, I don't know if you know this, but this was a very tight contest. A lot of votes, but a Thousand Island Airboats won. And just one other point, Larry, I had no idea that we made these airboats in Wisconsin, which is, again, why we do the contest, to educate people about what's made in our great state.
I think it's a really, really cool contest. And I like the fact that it calls attention to businesses that are really doing some cool things. Fun. I've watched your boat in action, a video of it. It is pretty cool. But you talk about your company, Thousand Island Airboats. You build the search, and you call it a search and rescue airboat.
Correct.
And your background, how did you, I mean, you're the president of the company, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Tell us, your background, I mean, you got a really interesting background, and then tell us about the company. Tell us your background.
Okay, my background basically is I was a nurse for many years. I served in, well, the ICU, the ER administration, went back to school, got my MBA in business. As we got the company, we have a major company that my husband runs, and then we brought this company in, I don't want to say for a hobby, but kind of, and then it grew. And so I am the president, and one of my sons works with me, and that's how I got into it.
Well, and what the background or the history of the company itself was really interesting to me. Talk about how it actually got going in the first place.
So the history of the company, it was developed by an individual up in Ontario by the Thousand Island Airboat area, which is near the St. Lawrence Seaway. The individual had a friend that tragically died on an ice shove or ice conditions where nobody could reach him. He died out there. And so this individual thought there's got to be a way to make a craft that can handle this kind of ice and rescue people that, you know, just can't leave them out there to die. Anyhow, so he developed this about 25 years ago, maybe, and ended up that we bought the company about a little over 8 years ago, and we brought it to Wisconsin. And since then, we've had it here for able to bring the search and rescue, also private individuals, but bring it to this area for especially municipalities, the federal government, the state governments, so that we can benefit the communities here for search and rescue.
It's really interesting to me because it's I was reading up a little bit on the design of it because you're on ice and then you might be in the water and
yes.
So
the design of our boat is specific. It was designed specifically to handle these kind of conditions. It doesn't have a deep V design like you usually have for in water. It has a little bit of a rounded, but basically it is there specifically designed to handle the ice. It has to be able to go atop of ice, maybe go through ice shoves, go through slush, go through transitional ice. And it can go on water, but so a lot of times when you have these fishermen that get stranded out there, probably a good example is the Bay of Green Bay. You know, the winds change, currents change, and all of a sudden you have fishermen out there floating basically on a ice island, iceberg. The only thing that can get to them is like one of our boats because you can't put a regular boat in the water. You can't use a snowmobile because you have water, you have ice. And so our boats are made to specifically endure these conditions. When you're out there on the ice, there's a lot of vibration. I mean, you know, you're just running. The boat has the ability to flex a little bit to handle these types of conditions. A lot of people, when they think of an airboat, they think of, we call them the Gator aluminum boats down in Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. So the problem with aluminum, they don't have that flexibility and those welds will break. So they're not specifically made for ice. And that's where our boats are made specific to handle those kind of conditions with the design that we have within them.
Very, very cool. Kurt Bauer, president and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. One of our guests, the other, Fawn Rogers, president of Thousand Island Airboats based in Marion, Wisconsin. It's great to have them with us. Questions for them, either about the boats or about the contest. or maybe you participated in the contest, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking today about the contest, the coolest thing made in Wisconsin, with Kurt Bauer of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and Vaughn Rogers, president of Thousand Island Airboats based in Marion, and this year's winner of the contest. Again, questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Kurt, what was it about Thousand Island Airboats that made it this year's winner, do you think?
You know, that's a good question, and you'd have to ask that question to Fawn, because a lot of our winners in the past have invested in social media. We had one year where a company, I won't mention the company, but they employed the talents of a certain Green Bay Packer to promote their candidacy, which helped quite a bit. So there have been different strategies. Some have employed, you know, their family members of employees. You know, we've had editorials. When Marinette Marine was a candidate, the local paper wrote an editorial telling everybody in the viewership area or the readership area to vote. We've had members of the legislature and members of Congress say, "Hey, this product in my district, you know, you should vote for it." So there's been a variety of things. So I'm not sure, Fawn, how you all won. Did you have did you wage a campaign? Did you get family and friends?
No, we didn't. I think it's just because we have the coolest product out there. Once it got in the contest and people saw it, and maybe they read up on it and they could see what it could do. We're a small business. So we didn't have the funds to employ the Green Bay Packers or make big billboard signs or to get involved. I do think that people saw how cool and what it could do to save the lives of many people. I know we have a lot of first responders out there that probably knew about it, and they run the boats. They could have been involved besides everybody at our company. I mean, I've heard of people that I didn't even know that were voting, and people down in, like, say, Milwaukee and different cities. But I think, yeah, if people got into the contest and they saw who was there, and if they looked up our boat, I think that's why it won.
Well, it's pretty cool. By the way, do you have any anecdotal information on maybe folks that have been saved?
Oh, yeah. You want to hear a story?
Give me a yeah, why not?
I'll give you a story. So we had one volunteer fire department from New York that they used to have an old aluminum boat, and they knew it was time. They purchased one of ours. We got it there. It was delivered on a Wednesday. They did training on Friday, and on Saturday night, they got the call. Boy, that'd be hard. They had two men that went in the ice on along the river. It was snowing. They had huge snow drifts. Our boat has extensive LED lighting on it, along with all the radar and the FLIR systems. And they were able to get to the two individuals, get them pulled out, get them back to the ambulance, and save their life. They had that old boat. They never would have reached those people. By the next morning, they called our company and told us the story.
That's got to make you feel just great, because you're not only, I mean, you're providing a product, and you know, you probably hope to make a profit on it eventually, but the good that it does has got to be so gratifying.
Yep. It's, you know, it's, we appreciate, because once we have the customers, which are mostly our municipalities, you know that they trust our product to go out and save those people, that they have the reassurance of the technology of Thousand Island Airboats.
Yeah, and I like the design, and actually the feature that is really nice is that the weather is always going to be crummy in these kinds of situations, and the people inside the boat, it's warm in there. It's kind of, it can be covered.
Yes.
It is covered.
Yes, we got a 40,000 BTU heater in there. If you're running for a lot, you could be down to a T-shirt in there.
Yeah. So, Kurt, what were some of, and I am sure that every company that in, you know, that took part in this has a good product. Well, I'm pretty sure anyway. Who are the other finalists this year?
So it came down to, like I said, we narrowed it down to four. So obviously, a Thousand Island won. Custom seating systems made by Parabel in New Berlin, Wisconsin, in the Milwaukee area. So that is basically specialty wheelchairs for athletes for a very unique product. Again, another product I did not know was made in Wisconsin. Hickman soy sauce out of Walworth, Wisconsin, the largest soy sauce manufacturing facility in North America is in Wisconsin because of the water resources and because of the access to soybeans. And extrication tools, TNT rescue systems out of Heartland. So there was on the final four, we had two that were for first responders. These extrication tools are what you use in a car accident if somebody is trapped in an automobile and needs to be rescued by first responders. So that was pretty cool, too. And they actually bring all of their samples of their products to our hall. And I said we had about 900 people at Monona Terrace in late October. So everybody had a chance to see them firsthand, which was really neat. And Vaughn brought the big airboat in, so we all had a chance to take a look at that as well. That was fantastic.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. Vaughn, and you're an ice fisherman, are you not?
I am.
I don't know if that had anything to do with your interest in these boats, but you enjoy getting out there.
I do. I like the outdoors, and I will go out in the winter and do some ice fishing and stuff. And I will comment, we do have, besides the search and rescue, we do have private individuals and actually ice fishing guides that have our boats. So there is some ice fishing that takes place with our boats.
That is, that's very cool. And some people just happen to run around in?
Yeah, well, some people too, but they're mostly, Canada is a big client that has, excuse me, water access only homes or cabins. And so they use them to access those in wintertime. And some use them for ice fishing.
Why not? Well, and tell us, there are different sizes and so forth.
Basically, we had two sizes, the 18-foot sportsman and then the 24-foot, which is a search and rescue. And it's also, we call it the caravan for a private person. Those are the two sizes. We mostly sell the 24-foot. It just gives you more room, for transport and people.
Yeah, of course. How did it feel to have that, your boat, airboat, named the coolest thing made in Wisconsin?
We were very excited. It was our first time in the contest, and we won.
Which is saying something. It often takes multiple years for somebody to make it to the top four, let alone win. So that's impressive.
Thank you. It is indeed.
And I imagine, well, I'm sure, Kurt, this brings, and Vaughn can talk of this too, this brings the winner is probably, it opens up some doors, or at least it sheds light on the company and what it does.
Well, we came to visit their shop. Vaughn, was that last week or the week prior? We came up to Marion, and we had some news TV stations from Green Bay come down for the ceremony, presented a flag. The trophy was on display. The trophy is beautiful, by the way. It's made by EK in Fall River. It's chrome-plated. It's beautiful. It's a chance to get some earned media, and again, to showcase all the things that are made in Wisconsin. Not just Thousand Island airboats, but all of the things that are made in Wisconsin.
Correct.
Yeah, and for you, on the business side of things, Vaughn? Of course, it's just happened, but I'm sure you've got...
It did. It was very, it's very busy, I'll say that, because I think we hit about every TV station, came either to visit... with the boats. Also, we've had a number of magazine interviews, some newspaper interviews. We still got one next week. It has been busy. I think, too, what the best thing is that it gets our product out there to show the communities what's available in these winter conditions, and that these departments rely on the boat, and there's nothing else that can get to these individuals that are in these precarious conditions out on the ice, and to save them. So I'm sure some of them have heard stories on the news once winter comes, and that's probably where, you know, we give our thanks to our first responders using the boats, and it makes the community aware of what's available to them.
Tim in Evansville called, couldn't stay with us, to ask if the airboats went through several design iterations before becoming what they are, and are there other design improvements for them in the works?
The basic, the airboat, the first design, or what we actually bought it for too, the hull is the same, that what we brought from Ontario. But since we bought the company, there has been multiple innovations and improvement. Every time we keep doing technology, you know, for today, everything just keeps improving. And we've put on different things. I mean, you can go on our website and see some of our videos. You know, we have put on a specialized brake that can lift up the back of the boat. You know, sometimes it'll freeze to the bottom if you're out there and sitting for a while, to every different electronics to make it safer for the rescuers out there. They have the floor with the heated, you know, cameras, along with, you know, there's radar, there's different screens. Most search and rescue have two different screens. One for the pilot, one for the co-pilot. There's heating mechanisms to help warm up a patient in the boat. So yes, innovation is there and it continues as we see it. But we have put a lot into it in the last couple of years.
That's wonderful. And you pretty much sell them all over the, at least the northern part of the U.S.
Correct. Northern U.S. and Canada.
And Canada. I would think some European countries might be interested in them as well.
We do get inquiries from the northern or the European. Sometimes they run under different regulations over in there. But, yeah.
How Kurt, I want to go back to you. Somebody might be listening and they own a company and are wondering, well, I wonder if I can get in on this and apply. How do business folks apply?
Well, we start in August every year with a nomination period. It's about 2 weeks, maybe a little closer to 3 weeks. It's in early August. Then we start the voting in late August into September. And then, like I said, we do it pretty much every 10 days. We narrow it down to the final, well, I can't say final four. I already covered that. The top four, NCAA, I said top four. Anybody can apply. Anybody can nominate. You can nominate somebody, your listeners, a company that, you know, you happen to have an affection for, or somebody who works for a company or the company's marketing department. But we always check with the company to make sure that they actually want to participate. We don't want somebody to be forced into it.
Yeah.
But we haven't really had that happen. Everybody seems to really enjoy the idea of just trying to promote manufacturing and educating everybody in the state on what's made in their backyard.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and a wonderful way to promote Wisconsin products, Wisconsin made products. I want to thank you both for being with us today. Kurt, a great pleasure. Kurt Brower, President and CEO of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. And Fawn Rogers, President of Thousand Island Airboats, based in Marion. You should look up online and take a look at those boats. They are really something. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we talk to Elliot Coleman, author of the new book, The Self-Fed Farm and Garden, A Return to the Roots of Organic Method. And then Mark Dwyer stops by to talk about bringing color and texture to your winter gardens. That's tomorrow. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And, of course, always appreciate all of the folks who work with me here on Wisconsin Public Radio. And stay with us. Lots more in store. I'm Larry Mueller.